What's Gucci? Oh, it's Marcus Aries. We're back online with Aries Online. This is the Luminance Podcast, episode 3. And we're talking about representation in music. Today, I got two guests with me. Give yourselves a young shout out while you're there.
That's the most awkward thing to do. I hate it. But I'm Max. Hi.
Who else we got in the room?
Dweezy, what's up?
Young Dweezy J. So we're talking representation in music. And I'm going to ask you guys, do you feel represented?
Pieces of me, not the full me, but pieces of me are represented when others are kind of pushed aside.
Can you elaborate?
I mean, I think it's been a grand movement in the industry for women to be represented and black women to be represented. So that's great because, you know, coming out, but they still, you know, the African side of me. And when I say African, I mean other than South African, because we're talking globally, you know what I mean? So I think there's pieces of that that still aren't represented as authentically as I think they should be.
Okay, and yeah. Young Dweezy?
Yeah, I think authenticity is very important because I don't want to discredit people's identities and sexualities they exist in. But a lot of the time, I do feel that there's an element of disingenuity. So it's very disingenuous when someone like Harry Styles will say, cool, I'm pansexual, but not relate to the community of pansexuals that fall below him, that aren't accepted. So it's easy for you to come out as pansexual, Harry Styles. It's easy for you to come out as non-binary, Sam Smith, because of your position in society. If you don't reflect and embody what a non-binary person on the ground goes through in your music, but you're making love songs or breakup songs or heartache songs that mostly women are going to relate to because you're going to be singing about a man, then it's going to be very disingenuous to the actual situation that queer people find themselves in on the ground. And then it becomes difficult for it to relate. So obviously I can relate to the Sad Boy Hour that Sam Smith tries to put out.
Me too.
We all relate.
But exactly. The thing is, like, how many of us are actually saying that this is our Sad Boy Hour, whereas if I say out of a population group of 100 that there's 50 women, and out of the 50 men that are there, there's only 20 of them who are gay, it means that the song is resonating and being felt harder by that female community than necessarily being specifically adapted to that queer community. And then it becomes very difficult for us to be like, you're an authentic queer artist because you're relating somewhat to us.
Yeah.
Do you feel there are enough queer artists like in the mainstream?
So I don't think that there are enough queer artists in terms of who they are making sure that whatever they've been through, that message comes through. So in hip-hop music, it's very easy for black artists to talk about a struggle and a come-up, or Kendrick Lamar to talk about a history of black struggle. That's then easily relatable to a lot of people on the ground. When queer artists are coming out, they're releasing love songs or breakup songs, but they're not specifically dealing with like Stonewall in 67, or they're not dealing with like specific issues that queer community, they're not talking about. I mean, some of them will, but I'm saying like Macklemore and Ryan Lewis did more on Same Love than I could actually on the top of my head think of any queer artist doing, because you either have the queer artist doing the heartbreak love songs, or you have them filling the mold of, I'm gonna make ratch queer music that like we'll bop out to in the club, but it will mean nothing afterwards once we've probably had too much drugs and fallen into the same culture that exists around that music. And then you're sitting there. So I think there's Shamir is a prime example of that, where he's just like, oh yeah, I'm the regular, so you know, and then he sings about them, so everyone's like, oh my god, this is my jam, like, oh, I'm gonna bop out to this, but it did nothing for you in terms of you dealing with yourself.
I honestly think the same theory can be applied when you talk about representation for African people. Yeah. Because not every African song is an Afrobeat where we dutty wine and we're breaking down. And you know, the one thing that came into my mind is something so glaringly obvious. Most Afrobeat songs are in English. Most African people don't speak English, can't understand English. And apart from, you know, the throwaway skits, like I could think of like on Burna Boy's album where he's talking about Johnson's and Johnson's and how like they actually stole Nigeria and all that type of stuff. Where's the actual real meaty stuff about colonialism and how black people are, you know, pushed down on a regular basis, African people are pushed down on a regular basis in a global view?
I feel like with Afrobeat specifically, it's mainly just done to appeal to a global market. The whole singing in English thing, because you look at like most African artists that will write songs and sing songs in their own languages, their songs don't really pop off.
Whose fault is that? Is that our fault? Is that their fault?
It falls on the consumer and the artist, I feel. because at the end of the day, the consumer is the one who decides to.
But that's the thing.
Yeah.
These artists know who's consuming their music. They should be very aware of who's consuming that music. So if they're going to be disingenuous and now be like, I'm making this music with absolutely no impression as to what my people have gone through, but I'm going to make this to tailor it to your market so that you can twerk in the club, or that so you can do this, this, and this. It loses an essence. And I also feel like that music, so if you make a good queer anthem about actual heartbreak that exists in a queer community, so Choice Ivan did it really well with Wild and sort of like Youth and all of those kinds of songs, it means that even like I'll Bloom. When there's a white girl and a white boy in the club who are singing this, my thing is, sure, you're speaking about I'll Bloom just for you, but has there been enough work in society for that straight woman or that straight man to know that blooming is this man saying, I'm going to bottom for the first time and you're taking my virginity in a queer sense? Like, are you picking that narrative up? Because the queer community is, but sure, that may be relatable to our narrative, but it can do so much more work, because he speaks about a lot of vulnerability for like gay first time interactions. Are the people who are persecuting queer people or ignorant to queer struggles picking up that same message from your song? Probably not, because he put a bop around the music and the lyrics that people in the club are just gonna dance to the lyric but not understand the lyric.
And I think it's also, it boils down to who's saying what, because I think a lot of the time people aren't here to listen to what is being said, they're here to listen to a person. And the first thing that pops into my mind is Solange singing Don't Touch My Hair. Beautiful, makes sense. That song should have come from Tiwa Savage.
Why did it have to come from Tiwa Savage?
What I'm saying is, who is more, and not to, you know, you can't judge anyone's struggle and you can't judge anyone's life experience, but who is more deeply rooted in that African experience of people not understanding your hair and not be, and you know, being misunderstood in that context? Tiwa, who's lived most of her life in Nigeria, in Africa, and grown up with that and now crossed over, or the other person who's kind of lived a Western lifestyle, a very privileged Western lifestyle, because that's just who she is. Not saying she didn't face the, like, you know, the issues, but it would have meant more for me. I would say it would mean more for me if it came from someone who's closer to me, if that makes sense.
But then that falls on Tiwa Savage then.
But it goes back to what you said. If Tiwa says it, no one's going to listen. And that's just such a problem. It's such an issue. And how do we overcome that? Like, what's the step to going beyond that and saying, okay, listen to the people who have the first-hand experiences?
Yeah, I think Laura Mvula tried to do it as well. When she released, like, she at least came down to South Africa where the rape crisis was most prevalent. And instead of just trying to be like, I'm a British woman, I'm going to film my music. So like, it's even like how the music videos are portrayed and how they package that kind of music. She wasn't just going to film it in like Bristol. She came to South Africa. She went to a small town in the Karoo. She recorded it there with local girls who had been through similar kinds of things and said, you know what? We're gonna make sure that if this song's ever released, that people are going to hear, and sure, they're going to hear a British woman singing about this with no lived experience, but I'm going to make sure that it's as authentically packaged as possible, that you will listen to it like someone at your hometown is singing it to you. And I feel like there's not enough people in terms of, you know, it's so easy for heterosexuals to sing about like country and their girl down the road with her pony, and like if Taylor Swift to release like Lover and all of that kinds of thing, that everyone can just relate to it. But as soon as a queer artist is going to try and do that thing, is that same message coming across? Because is it as authentic to that experience? So like, I can listen to Lover and be like, oh cool, you're my lover. And then I'm just like, I know she made this for heterosexual couples. What am I getting from this actually?
Okay, and then I wanted to ask you about the hypocrisy specifically.
Yeah.
And going to an artist that's like Tyler, the Creator. Everybody knows about like his previous music, like albums like Bastard, you know, where he was basically homophobic. But then do you feel that he repaired his image and he represented you well on an album like Flower Boy, where he speaks from the perspective of... a rapper in the closet and how it feels to be in the industry like that?
No, because as someone in the closet, you took the piss. Like, you took the piss out of the entire community. It means that you're sending a message that, cool, people in the closet should be homophobic, they should say problematic things, and then say, oh no, it was an ignorant phase in my life because I didn't understand the community around me. It's different when if you're straight and you've never had a feeling for you to be ignorant, we can then accept that maybe you said something in jest. So Pharrell's done it before in the past. We've seen people like many artists actually say problematic stuff and then realize their ignorance because they never had a lived experience in that stuff. If you've been in the community and you know how struggling that feeling is of coming out of the closet is, and you channel your own internal homophobia towards yourself outwards towards a community which has those same kinds of struggles, it's very disingenuous for you then to come later on and say, you know what, it's all Gucci. It's like, basically, it's that same excuse. I can be ignorantly racist because my best friend Max is black. And guys, I can definitely hate lesbians because I'm gay. Like, you can't channel that kind of energy and then come out a little bit later and say, I'm here for the community.
So you don't think there's like room for forgiveness and, you know, saying, okay, we understand this is what had happened and this is what you had thought and felt, but you've grown and matured from it and now, you know, we accept you. Do you think there's room for that? Or is it you said what you said and you taught what you taught?
The thing is, you put it out there. People were influenced by what you put out there. It means that they're, it doesn't, it, like, to me, it never matters that there's 50 boys in this world. Mm-hmm. If there was one boy who listened to that song that then walked out of his house the next day and said, I'm going to hate on gay people because I'm in the closet and I'm too scared to come out now, and I'm almost envious of the ability for you guys to actualize on your expression in a way I can't, that one person is enough to then be homophobic towards one gay boy and make his existence awful. And that's enough of an influence for me to say, you know what, you put it out there, you either pull that album completely, or, you know, don't jump on the narrative now because it's an easy bandwagon to ride in 2018 and 2019.
There's a word that you said, and it's influence, and it's got me thinking, us as the listener and the consumer, is there a way for us to kind of take away influence?
We can, but we just have to stop buying the music. That's the thing.
Is that the only way?
It is the only way, because we look at cancel culture. How effective has it really been?
It's difficult because, I mean, I'll always say my prime example of where I think, I personally say I don't believe in cancel culture. I feel like if I had to be held accountable for the things I said when I was 13, Lord God, what a mess. What a, like, you know, what a disaster. And I think one of the prime examples that I get very passionate about is Daniel Caesar. Mm-hmm. He puts out Fruity and everyone loves it, whatever. Comes out, he says a couple things. Now he's a sympathizer. Case Study comes out, a brilliant album, better than the first one.
True.
70,000 sales, like ridiculous, like nonsense numbers because he's been cancelled. Now, this is the thing. Can people change? Does that now mean, okay, yeah, cool, he said this, and he knew he had this influence. Did it actually influence people? Like, did people start sympathizing, or did people just turn and hate him? Like, you know what I mean?
People just turned and hated him.
Because, like, we even go back to the R. Kelly discussion. Mm-hmm. Cool, we cancel R. Kelly. Was his music represented, like, representing what he put out? Because what you basically say, even in cancel culture, you say, so R. Kelly, when he talks about, like, the storm is over and all of those kinds of things, that stuff had, sure, bad human being, but a meaningful piece of music that someone used to get out of maybe a dark place, mm-hmm. that somebody used to lift them up on a Monday morning when they didn't want to go to work and everything was down for them. Now I can't listen to that song. So for example, for me, R. Kelly, second album I ever bought in my life was the one with Storm Is Over, Ignition Remix, all of them, Bump and Grind, all that kind of stuff. I can see why Bump and Grind could maybe be construed as like going to that kind of pass. Ignition Remix, the same thing. But when you're looking at Storm Is Over, I Believe I Can Fly, like those are so distinctly separated from that kind of narrative that exists around now. Where I was listening to Storm Is Over to get through past like problems, I was using it when I was growing up as something as like motivating me, and now I'm like, I will never listen to that song again, regardless of the influence it had on my life, just purely because the individual is attached to that music.
So as consumers, we quick to forget about everything that the artist
did. I have 2 points on that. Number one, if we're going to do this canceling thing, we need to uphold the same standard for everyone, and we need to be consistent, because there's no way we're going to talk about R. Kelly if we're not going to talk about Michael Jackson. But when we bring up MJ, everyone's like, no, we're not talking about it.
We can't touch him.
We can't touch him. That's a problem. Number two, the problem I have is influence. I think, not to bash anyone or whatever, but I honestly believe that you as a person should have your own core and your own set of like morals and values and things that you believe in. Like, I'll say I'm the biggest Hive person, Beyonce, my whole life. But if tomorrow Beyonce came out and said, everyone go kill your mama, I'm not going to go and kill my mother. You know what I mean? Like, I have my own set of internal standards that no matter how much things are, you know, portrayed and set in a certain way, you kind of uphold in yourself and say, okay, is this right? Is this wrong? Yes or no? And you make a decision. You can't put all your decision-making power in a rapper.
But here's the thing. Music really does influence society, yeah, though, especially when you look at how we are now. Especially going back to like the previous Luminance podcast where we talked about how we objectify women. It's mainly because of the music that's in pop, the most popular music right now. You look at hip hop and you look at like the most misogynistic of music. That's the one that's at the top of the charts, and it's influenced like our society.
Mm-hmm.
It's influenced like dudes to think into thinking like women are possessions.
Prime example, they're Blurred Lines, right? Robin Thicke, Pharrell Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's like, the song is blatantly objectifying consent, woman, every kind of thing that involves that kind of woman.
Tense.
To the point where there's not a DJ in this country that you'll ever hear that play that in the club ever again, because there might be someone in the crowd that has been through something that you don't then want to trigger in that specific situation. And that's perfectly fine. When you're conscious of her in that club and two girls down from her, Hun, Becky Queen, comes up to your DJ booth and says, please play Blurred Lines. Even though we've cancelled that song, the influence hasn't reached her. Or the way we're trying to influence or reverse influence. So she picks up that it's a fun song, the beat's good, I can dance to it. I remember dancing to it back in the day, it's a throwback. I'm going to listen to the song now. Have we done enough to tell them exactly why that song's problematic? Or have we just said, Robin Thicke is a sexist, Robin Thicke doesn't like consent, we're cancelling it. And then this girl who doesn't understand consent, doesn't understand why he's a misogynist or sexist, is now going to be sitting there being like, well, I don't really understand why you're calling him that, which means I'm not going to listen to you. So I'm going to carry on requesting the song and playing it in my car and playing it at the house parties, regardless of who it offends. Are we doing enough to literally show people why and dissect one by one? So take the lyric and be like, can you see this lyric over here? This is what this lyric's trying to imply. And then directly link it to his character. And being so, Pharrell Williams got thrown to the curb almost because of Blurred Lines, and he was just like, mate, we wrote lyrics for a fun song and we were stupid to think that it wouldn't affect someone later on in the... But again, when artists are writing a piece, are you thinking 15 years? So was R. Kelly or were any of them thinking 15 years into the future to know that how sensitive the environment around that issue was going to be? Because at that moment, it wasn't. We can't say that Biggie never wrote tracks that were offensive to women. We can't say that Tupac wrote tracks that were offensive to women. But yet we're still bopping their music hard now just because we haven't singled them out yet or no one's listening as much to
That's
it right now.
That's my thing about consistency. Like, if we're calling people out, we need to call every single person out. And then I have a question. I feel like I'm full of questions. But why doesn't informed music do well? Because I'll, for example, bring up the example of Revival. Everyone hates it. Eminem's Revival. Everyone hates it. The worst album he's ever put out. But if you take time to sit and listen, this is a man speaking out against being racist, against being all these things. But everybody hates it. But the minute we put on, you know, freaking the old stuff where he's like, fuck niggas and I hate women and let's kill Kim live on air, it's a bop.
It goes back to what's popular at the time.
I also just think people don't want to face their problems.
Oh.
People don't want to hear what was Kendrick, King Kuna, right?
On To Pimp a Butterfly.
Yeah. People don't want to, in the club, they'll listen to King Kuna and they'll listen into it in their car and everything.
Yeah.
But also eventually people are like, I'm done hearing about like black people, like, or be like,
true.
I'm done hearing about
music
slavery.
Was, like
shut up, dude.
Worst album
and then,
fans.
Yeah, music has always had an element of escapism, and it's always kind of been like this, you know, secret place where you can go and run away from those things. So I understand people being like, you know what, I know the struggle, I don't need to live it when I'm just trying to chill. I get that.
Yeah, but like, there's a song called Rabel the Village, right? Perfect song to listen to by yourself because they're talking about like queer people trying to survive in society and they're saying there's something wrong with the village. Probably one of the worst songs you could ever play acoustically because there's someone sitting there crying, be like, does he have to sing the song right now? It's so depressing. Like, I don't want to have to deal with my feelings surrounding this music right now. Can you rather sing something more upbeat?
So do you think then club culture also influences music culture just like generally?
Most definitely.
Right?
Club culture is the most important thing in the industry right now, because if your music is not playing in the clubs, then you're not considered like one of the most popular artists. You're not making as many sales as
it's like similar to football. If you're not scoring goals, you're not going to be considered a top striker.
Yeah. And that brings me to my second point. How do you guys feel about culture appropriation in music?
It's so tricky. And you know, we have this debate even as in an academic sense of what is the fine line between appreciation and appropriation? Yeah. Because it's literally one step to the left and you're out. You're gone. So for me, I kind of have the approach of if you don't get it, if you haven't lived it, leave it alone.
Okay, so I want to ask about like an artist like Drake. He's known for being very genre fluid and he takes from so many genres. You look at like what he's done with Afrobeats on One Dance, and then you also look at what he's doing now with the UK drill scene. Would you say that's appropriation or appreciation?
He doesn't belong in the UK scene. Leave it alone. It's the lottery of birth. I can't now start releasing grime music as a South African. It has zero relation to my existence.
You know what?
It's the birth lottery. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I wasn't born in South London, so I have no place trying to say that I can do their culture better than what they can when they were born. It's like, imagine all of a sudden Kendrick took a hiatus, took 5 years, come lived in Atrichville, learned Setswana, and now decides to release like a Kasi record because it's popping in South Africa and he wants to release music on the African continent. How disingenuous must you be to even take people of your own racist culture away from them? And then the thing is, Drake will do better than every single other grime artist in the UK because he's Drake. It means that if Kendrick ever had to release a Vanak album, he will do better than every other Vanak artist in this country because it's Kendrick, which means they're getting clout and representation purely for who they are. And then the music just, it's a Kendrick Vanak song.
But don't you feel like it can help like put a bigger spotlight onto
that
genre?
For me, that's the thing that I appreciated so much about The Gift that Beyonce did, is because yes, it was supposed to be, you know, Lion King, Africa, whatever. And what I respected so much is that there are more songs that she's not on than what she is on. So if you, for example, take Keys to the Kingdom, that one, Tiwa Savage completely, Beyonce's not even on it. Still such a big song because Beyonce supports it. So I think there's an element of you can support a song, you don't have to be on it. If you want to make a whole, you know, grime record and whatever and say you're supporting this genre, put your name on it. Say you're a producer. Say you found this selected by, curated by, watch how it flies. But don't now start going in and trying to do it and now trying to own the style, because then that just takes away from the authenticity.
I don't trust him. Look at Views by Drake. Mapurisa was on how many of those tracks? Where was Mapurisa on any of the
Kutiwi.
On any of the features? Nowhere. Because and then all of a sudden people are listening to you listen to something like One Dance and you hear a clear Afrobeat there and it gets really popular. Did Mapurisa get big because of One Dance?
No,
he didn't. Yeah. So what did One Dance do?
That's my
to
thing.
Mapurisa,
that's what I'm saying. If you
community?
Really actually care about this genre and it's something that you say, okay, I need people to see this, you should be okay with not being on it and not making money from it and yourself not getting clout from it, but using what you have to push it.
Yeah, I believe the same thing.
And then let's go to race. Well, no, let's stick with culture, actually, because you, Dwayne, before the podcast, you did bring up an artist like Muzi.
Yeah.
How he's pushing like his own local sound and he's bringing it to an international market.
No one can say anything bad about Muzi in my presence. I honestly feel like that is the way to do it.
And Chris Martin is a prime example of someone who appreciates and not appropriates. Because Chris Martin said, here's my track.
Do it.
Send it. Like, go and do your thing.
And you know what I noticed is that a lot of local artists, when they stick to their sound and pushing their own culture, they tend to do better internationally.
100%. Look at Shoma Jozi.
Facts.
And you know, there's a song on her Limpopo Champions League album. Can't remember what it's called, but it's a song that's completely in Vernac. And everyone's like, why won't you translate it? Why won't you? She's like, if you can't understand, then it's not for you. Sorry about it. And I feel like African people need to have that mentality. And I saw it, like, I actually recently got back from a trip from Europe and I was always so amazed about how little they care about English. They don't give a shit.
No.
If you can't understand, it's even the same thing with the Chinese people. Everything in the airport is in their language. If you get lost, sorry mate. But Africans, we don't have that same thing. Our airport is fully English. None of us, that's our first language, so what's going on?
Like, even Korean pop, like, what's that band?
You have BTS, you've got all of them.
Biggest band in the world.
And the music is all in
Korean. I can't hear a thing, but there I am, bop it. My head is nodding.
And the thing is, it's true then to be like, I appreciate that more, that I don't mind white people dance in the club. Just don't stand there and mouth the lyrics like you know what's going on, firstly.
We're trying.
It's like very uneducated, like white folk who go to like black clubs and then I'm a piano plays and then they sing all the lyrics. And then you ask them, like my habit is I normally just want to go to after them. I'm just like, do you know what they just said in the song? And then they'll be like, no, but like, I think I was just mouthing the lyrics really well. Leave the track. It's the same thing with Parasite, the Chinese movie that now was released and Oscar nominated. They want to make like an English remake of it.
Don't do that.
Akira, they tried to.
Yeah, just leave it alone because we can bop to it in the same way that they do. We can just dance to the music. We don't have to appreciate it because I like that there are Korean people who will specifically appreciate those lyrics. And we can both dance to it in exactly the same way. And that's our swing. Like, it's authentic then to Korean people because it means that that was made for them. That's their track. So what I've always loved about people like Kasper Njovest, he will release songs like Malume and he'll release songs like Superman where he puts like Tola on the song at the end and it's completely like Limpopo gospel, basically. And everyone's like, oh, but this is like on your hip-hop track. Like, what's going on over here? And he's like, I honestly couldn't care because there's someone who's going to listen to the song at that point and they'll get derived something out of it that I mean for them, you can bump out to it and just enjoy the gospel at the end.
I honestly think it's also one of the biggest education, like, you know, opportunities that are out there. Because I'll say, especially growing up as someone who's not South African in South Africa, for example, now when Labatwana Ba Uba plays, like, first time I heard it, I was like, what do these words mean? I'm gonna need some subtitles. But then the process of actually learning that and understanding, like, oh, this is what this means. So not to say that I don't agree with Dwayne that, like, okay, don't sing ever, but take initiative and take like the time and skill to say, okay, cool, this is something I don't understand, but I like it and I appreciate it. Let me learn. You won't ever fully understand because you'll never live the full experience, but you can always learn and then find your space within it, you know?
And that brings me back to like an album like To Pimp a Butterfly. Like, myself as an African guy, like in South Africa, I did not understand or relate to Pimp a Butterfly at the first listen.
Yeah.
I had to take the time myself to actually understand that this is a concept album that's about like black African American
100%
struggles. And you know, it educated me on like people like King Kunta. Like, I did not know anything.
Even if you listen to someone, she's a bit more soul, but someone like Mavis Staples, I don't know if you've heard her, beautiful woman, she's like 70 and she's still recording music. Love it.
Wow.
And she's got an album and it's called Through the Fences, and it's just about literally being on the other side of the fence. And now she's talking civil rights movement stuff. Man, I wasn't even a thought, you know?
I mean,
but you kind of go back and you listen and you learn. And I think any time where people are learning, stigmas are being broken down, stereotypes are being broken down, and you can then go and apply that in your real life, you know?
But it comes down to, so like Jamila Woods, right? Jamila Woods releases a lot of black feminist music, right? And it's beautiful stuff. It's absolutely beautiful. Then they compared her directly to, in terms of sales and in terms of the markets they're reaching, someone like Azealia Banks. And they're saying, why is Azealia Banks reaching a higher market? And it's because if you go listen to 212, she's talking about licking a cunt and she's talking about doing all of those kinds of things. And she's talking about like makeup and her Versace bags and all that kind of stuff. And then Jamila Woods, who's authentically better, releasing better music, releasing more inspirational music. Why aren't people listening? Oh, because it's not what people want.
Like, boring.
Yeah, it's boring. We can't listen to it in the club. You have club music and you have music you can bop with home. The problem is too many people these days are taking the music they listen to in clubs and they taking it home, where that's not where you should be listening to that club music.
Don't you think it speaks to versatility though, where you kind of need a bit of both? Because we, like, as a person who's now kind of been writing and trying to do things, you think about it in terms of, okay, cool, you, at the end of the day, if this is now how you're trying to earn bread and butter, you need a single to push. You need a single that's gonna be on radio, that's gonna be in clubs, that's gonna, you know, let you eat dinner. And then, you know, track 9 can be that. Let me sit home and cry. Then track 10 is like for educational purposes. So I think it speaks to just how the music game has kind of evolved. Because you can't do one thing. You can't be a one-trick pony. It's not enough.
But then I have a real question.
Yeah.
Is music the medium to convey a message?
The perfect medium.
100%.
Why?
Because there's so many like ways music can reach you. It's not just through the sound. You also can affect people with music videos. Even your album art can like push a message that wasn't necessarily like visible before. You know what I'm saying?
And it's subliminal. For me, that's another thing about music. Sometimes you're listening, but you're not realizing what you're like learning and listening until it hits you somewhere else and you're like, oh wait, I actually heard that here, here, and here, and then you connect the dots.
But if I bring it back to it, so if music's so influential and music is so important to carry a message, why is it so easily cancelled?
Do you think music is cancelled or people are cancelled?
I mean, we cancel the song completely. I mean, if that artist recorded that track,
I don't think
it's
we cancel
gone.
Songs.
We don't cancel
we've,
the song.
We've
we
just
cancel
gone
the
round about this about how we don't cancel songs, but we cancel artists because you said Ignition still bops.
No, Ignition still bops, but I would never listen to it ever again openly. I don't even
openly.
Have it.
Openly, you see.
Openly,
no,
is a
so the thing is, if it pops up on like a shuffle, I'll reminisce, but then I'll quickly realize it's R. Kelly and I'll skip. That's just because of my own internal manufacturing. I don't have it on a computer. I don't have it on any of my mixers. I don't have any of my USBs. So it's nowhere. It exists nowhere in my life right now. Mm-hmm. But the lyric still, it stays over here. And so does The Storm Is Over. So
but
does
you
all,
see, Dwayne, what you've just said, you said the lyric stays in your head. And that's why music is the best medium, because it's there forever.
But then can I openly walk around and sing A Storm Is Over in public? Because then that's lost its message. Then the message is dead. Because someone else who was going to get that message
but
is now never
But your question in the beginning was, is it an effective way of conveying a message? Whether if the message is lost now, the message was there.
So what I'm saying is, people like Milo Yiannopoulos, Ben Shapiro, very problematic individuals on alt-right scales who say abortions should never be a thing, black people belong in their cages, women don't have any choice, Jews should have died in the Holocaust. Cool, I'll run through everything that Milo and them have ever said.
Yeah.
We've never cancelled them. They exist in their bubble, where people who believe what they believe and bop with what they bop with stay in their circles. If we're not cancelling those individuals, I don't believe then we should be cancelling people like R. Kelly and people like all of
them.
Because whoever wants to bop out to it, bop out to it. Then because the messages of the alt-right are coming a lot clearer through Milo and Ben Shapiro and all of their fellow human beings' narratives than what it is coming through music now. And I just believe that it's purely because the freedom of expression is better now with people just talking openly than what it is in music.
You know, this cancelling thing, it's so problematic, and we can go round and round, because I'll even bring this up. Shakespeare was most probably a racist.
Mm.
Let's
you know,
talk
there's
about
that conspiracy theory about how he stole
you know,
all his writing from a black woman.
Which one is it? Isn't it Othello, where the guy's black?
Yeah.
Like, he says some kind of like hateful things, and you're like, hey. So now does that mean we mustn't read Shakespeare? If you look,
it's also like the Quentin Tarantino chat, where in most of his movies he's writing down, like he's scripting nigger, and he's getting like a lot of people to
you
say
see?
It.
You see? So it's kind of like, we need to, I'm of the opinion, and I may be wrong, come for me, but it is what it is. You need to separate art and a person. I don't think they're always the same thing. Yes, you produce what you feel and what you could feel, but also there's so many circumstances and factors to take into consideration when someone sat down to make something, because there's a difference. And it's what I was saying earlier. If you are now struggling and you're like, bro, I need to eat, I need to pay my gas bill. And you're like, okay, let me write a club banger, which I know is going to F this, bitches, whatever. And you make money and you eat. Was it necessarily what you felt or what you had to do because of the circumstances? You know what I mean? So I honestly just feel like we need to start separating the person and the art. And that goes with the same thing when you talk about race, when you talk about, you know, gender, whatever you're trying to do. Because is it fair then to say that, like, and this is a question, I'm not stating an opinion, is it fair to say that a heterosexual person could never, not ever, write something that a homosexual person could relate to? Is that fair to say? Because surely the person and the art could be separated. And where you say, okay, I am this. Perfect example, actually, let me bring it up. Macklemore, White Privilege 2, the second one, because the first one was weird, okay? He's a white man writing about, you know, black struggle and racism. Should you say, no, that's not okay, because you're white? You know, you don't understand that. It's separating the art and the person. We should just apply that across the board?
I just don't believe that a white guy rapping about slavery is genuine. I can't sit here, because, cool, then you've read and you've understood a few stuff, and now you made a track that you know black people are going to pop out to. I feel like you could make a song about slavery for white folk. very easily, but then you get to come. But then you need to come for white folk. That's what you need to do.
Yeah.
Which means I'm fine with heterosexuals making songs about queer people, but that's not a song about queer people. They're making a song about homophobes. And that's going to protect queer people in the long run. I don't want them to talk about a queer struggle or talk about how coming out is a hard thing if you've never been through it. I would rather want you to release a track where you say, you shitty ass heterosexuals who make it so hard for the homosexuals to come out, this is your diss track. Take it.
Do you think this view and this conversation that we're having aids division and kind of even solidifies boundaries of saying, I'm black and I write for black people, and I'm white and I write for white people.
But stay in your lane.
Yeah, like you stay in your lane, but you still like give a message at the end of the day.
So you don't ever think there will be a time where there's one lane?
No, because then it means it's going to come to a time where are we saying that Zulu people shouldn't stay in their lane and they should just become harmonious with Xhosa people, and the Vendors and the Tongas should just merge their culture into one homogenous group. We are born in different cultures. Yeah. We are born with different lived experiences. It's our job to not just write for our own people, but it's our job to also write for... awareness on a larger spectrum. It's similar to, like, as someone who writes like academic pieces myself, I will never go, I think in my life, and ever go write on things like insolvency and that, because there are heterosexual people who can do that job pretty well. There aren't enough people who write of the same qualification. There's not enough people who are writing about queer struggle. So even when I look at other queer people in my faculty group, I look at them and I'm like, there's like five extras of you who could be writing on what you're writing about now, religion or whatever.
Yeah.
Why aren't you three who are in our class? Why aren't you three just writing about queer struggles like me?
So do you think everyone...
I wouldn't want like a black person to sing country because there's 60 other white people singing country. Can you please just like speak from a lived experience that you relate to?
So do you think everyone bears the onus and the responsibility to write about the struggles that face the community or the situation and environment that they found themselves in?
I think be authentic to your existence.
But Dwayne, that's a tricky thing to say. So you're saying, I'm black. Mm. Yes, 100%. Love it. Would never want to be anything else. You know? No offense. Do I now have to write music for black people?
What else are you to write about?
Music for people.
What people?
All people. Human beings.
So... you're gonna write
what
about.
What would you write about?
Exactly.
Okay, guys, we're gonna write about this.
You're gonna write about.
Heck?
You're gonna write about falling in love.
Yeah.
But please write about a black woman falling in love.
It doesn't have to necessarily be a black woman. You can
talk about a woman falling in love. But I would even say, how many times have we actually heard of like Beyonce or all of them? And I'll come for your girl.
Careful.
Black women navigating a dating scene is probably one of the hardest and most toxic situations.
Yeah, no, I can testify. What
like is? On earth. Because white women know that they have black men and white men loving them.
Yeah.
But black women know that it's only black men who really love them because the white men, if ever. Because, and then, so why aren't we talking about how you exist in that kind of environment?
Yeah, so
because you can sing the same love song.
Answer my question, Dwayne. Do you think you bear the responsibility to write specifically and express specifically and convey the concerns and challenges and experiences of the specific, and when I say specific, I really mean it down to the T, group that you found yourself in?
I think it's very important that regardless, so if I had to record a track that's very generic of me going on a road trip, that at least that somewhere in that thing, I am going to make reference to the fact that at a petrol station, they didn't want to serve me gas because I was gay. Or I went to a restaurant in a small town and they didn't want to serve me food because I was gay. I would 100% throw that in there and not just make it seem like I'm living like this normal human being. Because then people, so Sam Smith will release a song where they just see like, oh, he's just a normal guy in romance. And then it just normalizes that. It's like an erasure. It erases the fact. So he'll release a love song and then it will be Sam Smith sang about love. It's not Sam Smith, who's a queer person, sang about love. It erases the queer person because it's so then normalized in the community. It then, so that erasure just then constantly happens, which means people will start seeing, like you were saying earlier, they'll just start seeing Beyonce as Beyonce and they'll forget she was ever a black woman, which means they forget that black women exist in that song, which means black women don't exist when they relate to that song, and then black women just don't exist.
Yeah, I think if you look at things through that lens, the Lizzo Ari Lennox story makes a lot more sense, and the anger and, you know, feelings around that story make a lot more sense.
So I mean, that's why I don't listen to much music anymore.
You know what? Let's just not listen to music anymore.
And then another group that I feel is that, while genres don't really touch on, is religion. I don't feel like religion is represented enough in music. Like, we do have, like, our Christian, like,
Kanye, shut up.
Like, actually, I want to ask you guys about that. How did you feel about Jesus is King? Do you feel like it's a genuine album?
No. Yandi was his genuine album. Jesus is King was... He's going through a spiritual awakening, but he's pandering so, so, so hard, especially to the black Christian community in America, that you can just see through it.
I think Kanye should have made a very important phone call to a young man named Lecrae, because if you've grown up Christian, but you know, a lot of the newer kids who've grown up Christian, we grew up a lot listening to Lecrae, and he's one of the biggest Christian rappers that are out there. And it's one of those things where it's done so right, because only after someone tells you that this is Christian rap do you realize this is Christian rap.
Yeah.
You know, it's very...
It's not forced down.
It's not forced down. It's very subtle. And I think it's like Christianity is already forced on everyone. A lot of just the way society runs is a very Christian system. Why aren't liquor stores open on a Sunday? You know, things like that. Like, society is very Christian, and I don't think that's fair as a Christian person myself, because if I knew if I wasn't Christian, I'd be mad at it. And I don't like the way Kanye is doing it, but I appreciate it in some sense, because it's kind of like you have to, you know, Christians also have a thing of like, bring the lost to him by any means necessary, this evangelism type thing. And if that's the way it's gonna get people in, shout out. I don't appreciate it, though. I'll be the first one to say, I liked it because I am Christian, but if I wasn't Christian, I'd be like, what is this?
My chat is, when something has done so much harm to so many people throughout time, I won't hate you for being Christian because of the harm that was done by other people using your religion. I won't do that. But I'll be very sensitive to the fact that people will feel some type of way by being mainstreamed. I think Kanye and people like Kirk Franklin enjoy the hype around being pastors, but they don't make sure that the hype is around Christianity. The hype is around Kanye
and
his church.
It's around them rather than
the music. Yeah.
The hype around Kirk Franklin is how often can he jump up and down or jump off the stage. It's not about the words. My thing is, if you were a devout Christian, you would be able to find that music when you go and praise spiritually. You'd be able to get Jesus is King when you go to church, or you'll make sure your church has Jesus is King. I don't think that Jesus is King should be playing on 5FM. I don't think that Jesus is King should be being blasted in clubs. So I recently was watching a mix and they had a club remix of one of Jesus is King songs. And I'm sitting here and I'm like, it should not be mainstreamed to such a point where not only does someone feel uncomfortable by this religion being thrown at them after maybe how they feel about the religion, but there's going to be someone who is Christian in that audience who's going to be like, is this really what y'all are doing to something I hold so dear to my heart, which is the gospel? And then just treating it like trash, so there's gonna be a bunch of drunk people in the club, or there's gonna be some very just irritated woman in the car listening to the song because it's on the radio station.
You know, I think who did something really profound is actually Lauren Daigle. I don't know how you pronounce her surname.
I'm not sure who that is.
But she's a Christian singer who she put out an album. I think it's called Look Up Child, and it was best. She won Grammys for it last year, Dove Awards, every single award for like a Christian album and a motivational album that you could win. She got it. But it's one of those things where you listen, and even if you weren't Christian, you could relate. And I think even now, after, you know, trying to sit and write my own thing, you kind of sit and think, this thing that I've put down, how many people can I include in it? Because I think Christianity for so long has been very exclusionary and very like, only if you're saved, and only if you're baptized, and
Who's the man coming? Stormzy.
Stormzy.
Yeah.
Stormzy with the Blinded by Your Grace Part 2. Phenomenal. phenomenal song that you do not have to be Christian to enjoy.
Exactly.
You and don't.
This is the same thing that I'm bringing up with Lauren, because she has like, she has a song that's called Look Up Child. And you know, when you take it in the Christian context, it's like obviously look up to the heavens and look to God. But when you take it in the non-Christian context, it's literally just like, pick your chin up, sis. Things are going to be okay. Like, look up, keep it going, keep pushing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And having those kind of double meanings and encompassing and bringing in as many people as you can, I think is always the safest way to do it.
Yeah, because like Blinded by Your Grace, he basically says like, Lord, I've been hopeless, although I'm not worthy, you fixed me, I'm guided by your grace, you came and saved me.
Yeah.
He even said in interviews after that, he was like, that doesn't have to be Jesus himself
exactly.
or God himself. He
exactly.
said he said that that could be a drug addicted boy in South London who found like a mentor, or his aunt or his mom came and said, you like your grace as a human being. And I think even Florence and the Machine did it well, where they had a song where they used the word grace in it, but Grace was a girl and Grace was a divine spirit.
So it's done without like,
and they said that for someone who is not religious, that grace is your mother. So if you're not religious, that grace is your mom, and she protected you and she fixed you, and you were blinded by her presence. It's not God's presence, it's her presence to you.
I think
which is
music,
so much more meaningful.
Yeah, it's very important to leave things open enough for people to make it for themselves.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And relate to them and relate to these things for themselves. Because even if you speak about angry music, you know, if we go the opposite way and when it's like, F you, whatever, no one has to specifically say, my ex, my dad. But you know yourself when you sing it, you know who you're talking about. And I think the same thing should be done with Christian and motivational and religious music.
I think it just needs to be far, far more tasteful. I think what Kanye is doing it to it right now has moved it into how much hype can I create around myself using religion.
My question now would be, would this slap as hard, or would it be as big as a topic if it was a different religion? If Kanye was now like, I am Buddhist and I'm about to shake it up and you know, or whatever, would we still be on this bandwagon?
Okay, now it comes more to the artist, because it's now Kanye is a big artist and he's the one who's using the religion rather than the religion is uplifting the artist.
Exactly. And that's messy. But hey, listen, judgment day will come. Everyone will have their day. We'll be standing there with him. So let's not judge, hey?
But I think that was a good convo. We touched on a lot. How do you guys feel about that?
All good in the hood. It's interesting to hear other people's, you know, opinions. And it opens your mind. And I think as long as conversations like this are happening, progress is being made, you know?
I love music. Music is such an important part of my existence, of my soul, of my being. I don't know if I would be the person I am today without music.
I'd be dead.
Especially the person I am today without the music artist I listen to specifically. And it's because I had conversations, and it dates back to when my mom was listening to people like Barbara Streisand, Neil Diamond, all that. Like, my dad was able to call out Robbie Williams when Robbie Williams was being problematic back in the day already. Too many people are just listening to a song and saying, this sounds really good. Not enough people are having conversations about music. And I'm telling you now, what artists really want is they don't want you just to hear the song. They want you to feel the song, and they want you to talk about their music. Not enough people today are having conversations about the music. And the moment at which we start having these honest conversations about music is the moment that we were able to derive meaning and association and authenticity to the music. And it means that we don't have to have really shitty artists just releasing songs that say utter bullshit, because it no longer cares about the conversation. It's just, how can I get them two-stepping in a club?
Yeah.
Well, guys, that's the Luminance podcast, bringing light to music. Shout out to Max and Dweezy for coming through. Max has an EP coming through soon. Make sure you peep her socials. Dweezy also has a podcast coming out. He's the breakfast presenter on Tux FM. Guys, plug yourselves before we sign out.
It's Max Sizzle on everywhere. I really think that is the coolest name ever. Marcus hates it, but you know what? No one asked you.
And then Dweezy Original on everything except for Twitter. Dweezy J Original, because J's for Jabulani.
Jabulani.
And it's been Marcus Aries signing out for Aries Online. Until next time, go listen to all the other content on the channel. Comment, subscribe, follow, do the most. Shout out.